It's Sunday, which means it's time for Viewpoint Presents with Malcolm and Michael Johns. Each week, we bring you the top global and national news stories presented with facts and top-tier analysis, all from a perspective rooted in America's founding principles. Join us in defending our great nation and American liberty. Now, here's Malcolm and Michael with the week's top stories.
I stand before you tonight, honored by your support, proud of the extraordinary progress we have made together over the last four incredible years, and brimming with confidence in the bright future we will build for America over the next 4 years.
Well, you hear President Trump there in his acceptance speech and second term, four more years. You hear the crowd, and it was quite a convention. And, you know, we've been talking about both conventions over the last many, many days here, but the tale of these two conventions. And when you really look at them, they tell you different things about it. And you know what I would even suggest to you? It would tell you the way and the style of which, how they'll govern, in other words, when you see the two. As an example, Joe Biden, I mean, he promised his whole campaign was darkness. He talked about lightness and darkness, as you recall. And he promised to lead the country out of a season of darkness. And, you know, I'll tell you what, my fellow Americans, I think that's really cool. It sounds great and all, but who created the darkness, you have to ask yourself, right? That's the real question. Who created that darkness? Well, let's start right there. Welcome to Viewpoint Presents. This is Malcolm here, along with Michael Johns, and good to be with you. As always, we have a great program coming up. I always love this, and we're juiced and ready to go here. And I'll tell you, I get goosebumps looking back at some of the speakers, Michael, the convention. I'll have to, right, in all really honesty to you, in full disclosure, I could not find a bad speech among them. They were incredible speakers, very passionate, authentic. And I'm talking about the RNC, quite a contrast between there and the DNC, you think?
Yeah, I think it was incredible. I don't see how anyone objectively looking at it from any political persuasion could not acknowledge the fact that the RNC was so much better done. And obviously it was just the, you know, just start with the ambiance of Trump's acceptance speech, of being able to do that on the South Lawn, looking out at the Washington Monument, you know, with a live crowd that was a little enthusiastic. It kind of brought back the memories of his exceptional stadium rallies, which hopefully he'll have the chance to restart again. And then the content of the speech, I labeled it, you know, I had a flood of media inquiries on the speech here and abroad. And, you know, I said I really believed it was one of the better acceptance speeches of modern times. And it was good. It was so good because he had so much content to work with. I mean, as he walked through the accomplishments of the first 3 years, as he walked through the contrast of his approach to America versus Joe Biden's swamp-like 47-year career, and as he even walked through the current crises confronting the country, you just could see this was a man of mission and accomplishment. You couldn't get done listening to all that stuff and deny that he is a doer and a man of action. And he's done it against great odds, as I think every American knows.
Yeah. You know, I've been thinking in past days, Michael, and when we look back down the road ahead, I don't know how many years ahead, but when we look back historically at Trump and this, there'll be a lot of things that will come out of this. But one of the things is that we will realize that we just witnessed one of the greatest presidents of our lifetime. And I don't say that casually or passively. I mean, I truly mean and believe in my heart that we are witnessing right now one of the most interesting historical times of our nation's history, but also one of the greatest presidents to carry this country through. Is that an overstatement to you?
Not to me. I mean, I was saying that back in all the way back to 2015 as someone who, you know, grew up watching him in Atlantic City, watching him in Manhattan, kind of in that region of his universe, and then ultimately getting to know some of his advisors and staff, that I told anyone who would listen, I said, this is an exceptional man. This is a once in a lifetime sort of man. These people don't come along too commonly. And it's not just the policy, it's the determination. It's the mind and the way it works. It's his intelligence. It's his relatability. And, you know, it's also him as a person, which he's been so unfairly slandered by mainstream media. But, you know, throughout his life, he has proven an incredibly generous, giving, community and country oriented man. You can go back and look at when Oprah Winfrey asked him that question about running for president, you know, and everyone saw early on in this man's life that he had leadership written all over him.
Yeah, and that interview with Rona Barrett, of course, which has been circulated by the millions and gazillions now at this point, but you're so right. There were a lot of years that he was certainly outspoken about U.S. policy and sometimes lack of it, or the way a lot of the leadership on both sides of the aisle were very lackluster. And Donald Trump would point that out quite a bit, actually, as a citizen, always staying somewhat removed from it, but supporting whoever could get the job done. And that's the thing about this president as well. He doesn't succumb to one political ideology or one belief system. He really is, as you just said, he wants to move the ball forward and he's willing to do whatever it needs to be. That's, you know, that's a beautiful thing. I mean, he is a patriot all the way through. And he resonates with Americans in such a way that, you know, I think as we've seen, Michael, in past times now, he has scared the hell out of the establishment to the point that they have gone cocoa for Cocoa Puffs crazy, man. They don't know what to do.
They have. Look, and before he took office, and even before the primary was settled, this guy scared them more than anyone else. It's one of the reasons I endorsed him on day one, because I knew enough about this that short of a man of that capability and of that orientation, nothing was going to change down there. There were plenty of great Republican opponents in that primary race, and I know probably all of them. I've literally helped get elect through our Tea Party movement, and Rubio and Rand Paul, and these are all great guys. For this moment, you need somebody who's going to be able to take the heat and do the difficult things. And he had, I think, what's interesting about his New York City real estate career is he was pretty engaged in a political way then, but not in a way that they perceived as being conservative or Republican. So they all loved him back then. You know, he would get award after award. You know, he was beloved by all these African American organizations in New York City that awarded him for the legitimate work he did on behalf of the African American community up there. Liberal organizations, you know, he blended right in with anyone and everyone. But if you do go back and look, the consistency of his discussion, particularly as it relates to America's unique standing in the world, and particularly as it relates to the threat that communist China presents to us, and how, to use his phrase, how they've been ripping us off, which is exactly right. He had that vision in his mind from the very beginning. And I think he really, like, when he discusses the fact that he was drawn into this race, not by any desire to, you know, be a political figure or a historical figure, but by the fact that he saw that really this country was at a defining moment. I think that's one. And I know for a fact, that's 100% sure. This has been no pleasure ride.
No, compared to
the life he could be living.
Well, he was prophetic. I mean, the things he pointed out 20, 30 years ago that absolutely came true. Well, listen, let's talk about what the media is doing here now. And so I just want to read you a few headlines so that you can chuckle here today and get a chuckle out of it, Michael. But yeah, so here's a couple here for you on the whole inauguration, since we're talking about his acceptance speech and the whole convention speech, rather, you know. Fox News host trash Trump's flat RNC speech. It was far too long. And when they say Fox News hosts, it's with an S, meaning multiples. Trash Trump's, of course, Chris Wallace was at the front of that.
Who said that over there?
Well, Chris Wallace definitely said it. He was the first one to say that. And there were others after him who said it as well. We have to look up and see what those names are. But I've heard it in multiple sources. But let me go on here. The other ones are Trump attacks Biden as he accepts Republican nomination. That was the New York Times there. I mean, like, that's a revelation or something, you know? Republican convention final night review. Donald Trump delivers Biden bashing. But very long speech. That was pretty well. Everybody said that at 70 minutes. It was long, they all said. Another one was against a majestic backdrop. Trump gives a standard rally speech. Standard, they called it.
Standard.
I mean, that's the best adjective you could come up with there. You know, that was CNBC there. You know, that was going to go there. And then and I love this one from the Washington Post here. And Trump attacks Biden and cast himself as an insurgent in his acceptance speech. Yeah. So there was a lot of the media pushing their narrative out there. But you know what's ironic about it, Michael, is earlier that evening, I had put out a message in multiple social media outlets, just to be a smart guy, to say, you know, I have a prediction for everybody, I said. And the prediction is that I think the media is not going to like Donald Trump's speech today, you know, meeting tonight. And there are a lot of people commented and said, yeah, you're just amazing, man. You can see the future. But it wasn't that the case that we knew that was going to be the case, right?
Not yeah, surprised. I think that was a 1-1 odds in Kentucky Derby terms or something.
I love it.
Yeah, I think it's pretty safe bet on that one. But you know, look, I'm looking through the speech. I've watched it. I've watched a replay of it. I've read it. You know, and one of the I love that he focused and early on in the speech about the fact that he, you know, has gone against the grain. He said after describing a bunch of Biden, shipping of the jobs to China. Well, actually, what he said about Biden himself is telling. He said for 47 years, Joe Biden took the donations of blue collar workers, gave them hugs and even kisses. That was a little bit of a joke, I guess, and told them he felt their pain, and then he flew back to Washington. Took Amtrak probably, and voted to ship their jobs to China and many other distant lands. Joe Biden spent his entire career outsourcing the dreams of American workers, offshoring their jobs, opening their borders, and sending their sons and daughters to fight in endless foreign wars. Mm. I think that capsulizes, in essence, what Biden would bring back. And then importantly, he describes, as I was mentioning, entering this race. He said, four years ago, I ran for president because I could not watch the betrayal of our country any longer. Mm-hmm. I cannot sit by as career politicians, let other countries take advantage of us on trade, borders, foreign policy, and national defense. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a very good summary both of his policy vision, of his sense of what we're up against again, and another swamp political figure in Biden. He just went on from there, and I haven't counted, but I mean, I think you could easily say there's 50, 60 substantive policy accomplishments that mm-hmm. he highlighted, all of which were meaningful enough for a national television audience.
You know, when you talk about sons and daughters, I love what you just said moments ago about the sons and daughters to war and so on and so forth. You know, I think about that in that sense, and he takes it very seriously, certainly as the commander in chief, but as a citizen, he takes it very seriously. This is something that Donald Trump has talked against all his life, actually. He did not see the value. But, you know, this is really a deep state establishment operation, part of why they find Donald Trump such a threat. I mean, the industrial military complex is not happy with a Donald Trump because, you know, early on when he talked about running, the media portrayed him as a reckless madman, like a scientist in a laboratory somewhere, Michael, who was going to put us into all kinds of war. And the guy was reckless and crude, and he was going to have us, you know, tied up in knots and sending, you know, it was all about war. The man was bad for that. And I have to believe that's exactly what a lot of them were
hoping. He's
been
the peace president.
Yeah, he's the peace president. That's it, buddy. But they were hoping he was for war, but not.
Well, look, you know, once you, I think anyone watching politics has hopefully figured this out by now, but when you don't want to debate the substance of policy or politics or
you're a racist. History you're a of an
individual. Yeah, there's about three or four, words and adjectives you can apply to individuals, and it's designed to shut down debate, you know. So you call the guy, you said he's going to start World War III. Think about that. He's taken out the world's leading terrorist in Soleimani and Iran, and Iran is still a threat, but quieter than ever. He's pulled troops out of Afghanistan, leaving and negotiated I think it's still going to be a difficult situation, but, you know, removing us as the policemen of that country, the longest war in American history, by the way, and Iraq as well. I mean, big numbers of troops coming out of Iraq. And, you know, so we're strong. You put $1 trillion into our national defense and really refurbished it and made it to the point where we are the leading military power in the world. And he's not capitulated, you know, is in the South China Sea against China as they attempt to build all these islands and threaten these areas. But he is also simultaneously not someone who is seeking conflict for the sake of conflict, you know. And, you described him as not fitting into any ideological sort of definitional role. And I think a lot of people would agree with you on that. And I think I agreed with you on that. But I've really more recently come to conclude that he has defined an ideology. I think there is a thing called Trumpism or whatever we want to call it that has a definable trade, borders, economic growth, America is a great nation, patriotism, strong national security. Any American can make it here if the government doesn't get in the way. I think you can kind of summarize this ideology as one that, in my judgment, has saved the Republican Party. It's transformed. It's still transforming the party, and there's plenty of resistance within the party to it, because a lot of these people don't know how to do it any different way. But I think we need. I've always said I want to be active in advancing an agenda and a party and a movement where, you know, when I sit down at a bar and I'm talking to some guy over a beer who doesn't know anything about my political involvement, you know, he kind of nods his head in agreement on any of these comments, you know. The kind of party we need to be. We need to relate. We need to be relatable, identifiable people of our word, and sincere and about the people, not about ourselves.
Yeah. You know, Donald John Trump understands the value of every life. And you see that. I see that all the time in him. I see how he is, his mannerisms, his body language, and the passion. You can't fake that stuff. And you can read that man a million miles away when he's confronted with whoever it is, a wife or a widow or a son or a daughter or somebody, some situation. He understands the value of every life. And he also realizes and recognizes that somebody who is willing to put their life in harm's way, somebody who is willing to give of their life for this nation, there is no higher honor. There is no bigger patriot. And Donald Trump recognizes that, and I think that's why he gives so much of himself to the military and to these people, and that's why they appreciate and respect him back so much for all of those reasons. You know, I started this segment, I talked to Michael, I want to get your opinions of this, because I posed the question when I talked about the DNC, and the big motive operandus there was, well, it's a season of darkness, and they were going to lead the country out of a season of darkness. Now, the season of darkness being the pandemic that has transpired and the collapsing of, I'll use the word collapsing, of America's cities. I don't want to just say civil unrest. It's far more than that now. And, you know, when you look at those two, and you and I covered in the earlier hour about, you know, in that Pew Research survey, one of the most important things of the election points that people are going to vote with. But I have to tell you here, the question is, who did create this darkness? I mean, let's step back a moment and talk about, you know, I think this should not be lost on anybody. The DNC and Joe Biden in particular, Michael, you know, they want to put a narrative out there like, you know, that's a season of darkness. But Michael, this was just to me another game of impeachment that they did without using the word impeachment to try to get a president that's doing historical things out of the Oval Office by creating the season of darkness. Are they not the ones who created the season of darkness?
Yeah, there's no doubt. And, you know, as you and I have talked about before, I mean, our Tea Party movement blocked the Obama-Biden agenda from, the last 6 years of that term. So they only had 2 years to really get everything they wanted. But when you really look at what they got and what they delivered for the American people, I mean, it was utterly unremarkable. Lowest labor participation rate since the 70s, lowest home ownership in 51 years. They had 11 million more Americans on food stamps when they left than before they arrived. 43 million in poverty. That was up 6 million from when George W. Bush left. These were the guys who talked about hope and change, about how they were going to, you know, take care of the poor. National debt doubling on their watch. Almost $1 billion in new business regulations, 3,000 of them, many of which Trump has repealed. And they've lost 300,000 manufacturing jobs. And not only that, but they didn't apologize for it. They said they're gone and only a magic wand could bring them back. Global trade deficit rose to $752 billion. I think in a country that ended up racially more polarized when Obama and Biden left than before they arrived. In fact, that's quantifiably true because it improved on Gallup's polling a few points in the first few years of Trump. Trump was making progress on these issues. And it's tough not to look at it and say, you know, doesn't that ultimately frighten this party that has so designed itself around identity politics, around the idea of developing constituencies based on their ethnicity or their religion or their sexuality? I mean, that's kind of been a big part of what they've been about. I mean, they've not really, how do you raise, let me start with just some basic questions. How do you raise $4 trillion of taxes in the middle of a pandemic with a straight face and say, yeah, this is good for the country. This will be helpful. I mean, I honestly think the American people have sort of shut some of this stuff down or maybe not thought about it, but it's crazy. What you're going to increase Joe Biden is going to increase the corporate rate from 21% to 28%, exceeding again. We're going to tax our companies higher than China's going to tax their companies. That's positive. How exactly?
Well, if you take everything you say and you really think about it, and I mean, you really think through this thing now a minute here, the radical policies that they're trying to impose on the American public, as you just mentioned, Michael, and talking about some of the dollars and the trillions that they want to increase in the tax base, you think about it in the terms of, well, they're pretty radical policies, but in order to get those through, they're trying to paint this picture of darkness in that somehow they're the light. But is there really any other way that you're going to try to implement a Marxist program on the nation? And that really is where we're in jeopardy right now. And I'm absolutely convinced, and a lot of people may not be taking this seriously, but what's going on in our republic right now is not business as usual. It's not politics as usual. There are some really pressing challenges and issues of the day, and they play right to a lot of these forces that I would suggest to you are attempting to take over our nation. And I think they do exist. And I think a lot of people are sitting there aghast, not truly understanding when you look at the problems out there that we've been talking about here to all of you out there. But well, let's do this. You're joined here with us with Michael Johns and Malcolm here on Viewpoint Presents. We're thrilled you're here with us, and we're just having a great time here with this new program and our new second hour of Viewpoint. This November will be our 3-year anniversary for the Viewpoint brand, by the way. In fact, it's the first week with the election cycle is when we'll actually be celebrating our 3-year anniversary. So I look forward to that moment and look forward to doing some things with you all out there for that recognition of the 3-year period. So one of the things Michael and I want to talk about next is, and not what you all think about out there, but this nationwide sports shutdown sort of plays to some of the things we're talking about now, here with some of the extreme viewpoints and a lot of information that's out of context. And right now you've got professional sports walking off. I mean, they're walking off the courts, they're walking off the playing field, they're walking off everything, and they think that America owes them a living and owes them the basis for them to make millions and gazillions. I mean, it's their profession they're walking off on. My fellow Americans, it rattles the brain. It really, really rattles the mind. We'll take that up and much more. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Welcome back to Viewpoint Presents. And listen, I never thought I'd see the day where sports players would just, you know, throw off and walk off and say, you know what? I mean, we're out of here. And it's not just one sport. You know, over the last couple of few years, it was really the football, NFL, that really was, you know, doing all the kneeling and the disrespecting to our flag. And, you know, that's been a storyline that's now been building for some several years, really. But now you've got it in the NBA and the WNBA. And the MLS and the MLB, Michael, which is, America's pastime. What is that? Apple pie and what do they say? Chevrolet and baseball or something like that. I don't know. And I grew up on sports. I grew up on baseball. I know you love sports as well. What do you think of this whole shutdown, walk down, boycott, whatever the hell you want to call it?
It's horrible because, I mean, it's really one of those few things that I think the American people sort of escape to and trying to relax and, you know, from the day-to-day stresses of life, which obviously include some of our country's political tensions. And then, you know, to have all of that sort of like put right back at you in a generally uninformed and traditionally hypocritical liberal way is it's immensely problematic and troubling and concerning. And I know many people who just simply stopped watching the NFL all the way back to Kaepernick. As soon as Kaepernick took that knee, that was it, you know. You know, and it's interesting, if you say this thing, it didn't really start with Kaepernick, because you go back to Ali, you know, with him and some of the protests that he had. You could go back even further, but there were isolated cases of individual athletes. I mean, when you have an entire team involved or an entire league involved, they become part of a political apparatus. So you take Kaepernick, which is interesting to me, because he went in the NFL 2012 with San Francisco. And then, you know, really hadn't played for a long time. He was behind Alex Smith, goes down in the when Alex Smith goes down in the concussion, he comes in. And so he has like 4 years until 2016 when he first takes the knee. Well, that's kind of interesting timing, I'm thinking about. So it was like he was unwilling to take these steps under Obama, but very willing when I think it started to become glaringly clear that the political pendulum was swinging the other direction. And then, of course, you know, more recently, if you follow the NBA at all, the really troubling remarks of criticism that were targeted at the Houston Rockets general manager, Daryl Morey. I mean, this is a guy who, pretty innocently tweeted out an image in support of the protesters in Hong Kong, which said, "Fight for freedom, stand for Hong Kong." Mm-hmm. You see anything controversial in that? I don't know. I mean, it seems like innocuous and freedom oriented and supportive. Well, the whole league went crazy. China went crazy over mm-hmm. it, as they do. They I'm really, the closer you look at this regime, they're always offended, constantly offended. It's the way they silence debate on these things.
Well, why doesn't the whole NBA move to China then? I mean, they can take the whole damn league.
Well, and that was my concern is, I think like if the NBA, which does a huge amount of business in China, which mm-hmm. is obviously a huge factor here, just sort of acknowledge, that individuals are entitled to their own respective viewpoints, and if
not in China, they're not.
Well, I mean, in these leagues,
I know.
So, if somebody wants to come out and defend this regime with 3 million Uyghurs in concentration camps and breaking treaties to suffocate the rights of the people of Hong Kong and crushing the Tibetans and, engaged in organ transfers and plants and all these horrific steps. Yeah. Let them do that, I guess, if they think that's good for the brand. But here you had a guy who really did this, and the whole league pounded on him quickly, mm-hmm. made him retract the statement. I think he had apologized for the statement. This is how Marxism really works in its early phases of shutting down and making it almost, embarrassing to speak out on the most sensible things.
It's happening right now. It's happening, Michael. I mean, you just said, I'm glad you say what you said, the early stages of Marxism. People need to understand what we're talking about here. It's been a thread that's running through almost all the conversations we're having, and people are really, it's more than apprehensive. I mean, I think people who follow this stuff and understand the stakes are scared, really scared right now. Of what's happening, because you are seeing a lot of the signs of Marxism peak their ugly head in our country. And without stopping that stuff and really doing a reverse course, we're going down a path that we absolutely don't want to go down in our country here. Historically, we will get to a point where we won't be able to come back.
It's full institutions that are falling into this, which is, I think, what's most frightening is that I think we're making a case. We have, people on our side that are persuasive and things. But we have not, as a movement, centrists or patriots, been in the movement of trying to. I think we've ignored the direction of these institutions and not done enough to protect mm-hmm. them. And now they've fallen into essentially hostile hands, and we're disgusted and upset and angry. And our reaction is just to continue to point out how biased they are. Well, of course they're biased. These sports incidents go on and on. I mean, the latest with this Milwaukee Bucks situation, where the police shooting of Jacob Blake out in Kenosha, which was filled with controversy and still being investigated. I mean, he was armed with a knife. The police report talks about how he forcefully fought with police officers. He had an outstanding felony warrant for his arrest. A lot of these facts get completely lost. It's just presented like another black civilian shot in the street.
Well, that's what they want to put it as. That's what they advertise it as, but it's not that at all. Michael, earlier in the program, we had Chief Bernadette DePino and Lieutenant Pangaro on talking about that case, and they say, you know what? When a criminal doesn't respond to the police in such a way, when they don't take the police's command, you see, there's no respect anymore for the police officer. And now the media and the political people have made it into a game. And now a lot of these people, their lives are becoming more in jeopardy because they're defying the police orders. And the first rule of thumb is you don't defy law enforcement orders. When they tell you to stand down, you got to stand down. And when a guy reaches into his car and for a knife or for a gun or whatever the hell he's got, you don't have time. Like Chief DePino said, you've got basically maybe a second. You got to react right then. That's why you shoot, and you shoot to disarm the situation. That's what happens.
And you got to realize law enforcement doesn't know what's going to happen.
They don't know.
They know one out of every certain one of these cases is not going to end well, and that there are people out there with nothing to lose.
They're going
to
be killed.
So, I mean, what I've seen in all in many of these recent cases, without not saying that the use of shooting was necessarily justified, because we weren't there, and neither were these critics, and neither were the Milwaukee. I'll tell you one thing: the Milwaukee Bucks definitely weren't there, nor did their players have anything articulate, really, I think, to say about the situation. But you know, you look at these cases, and even the Minneapolis case. I mean, when you look at the second video that came out, I mean, he's clearly acting weirdly. He's pushing back. I don't know if you'd call it technically resisting by, the definition of that word, but he hardly was following, you know, basically the direction and the order. And you have to look at that situation and say that could have gone differently if the officer had not been as aggressive as he was, and maybe if the defendant hadn't acted as aggressive as he was. And I'll tell you one thing. One great thing about America Out Loud is that you have some of the greatest law enforcement, I think, experts, and you know, people who have lived this life and seen it up front and understand that law enforcement is not trying to create turmoil in communities. They're trying to settle turmoil in communities. It'd be a much easier job if they didn't have to confront these things.
It really
is. So anyway, the Bucks took they have in professional sports, you have a thing called the collective bargaining agreement. And you know, that bargaining agreement says that you cannot basically strike. The Bucks just go, well, we're not going to play this playoff game against your Orlando Magic. And the NBA not only doesn't do anything about it, but they simultaneously allow two other playoff games.
The whole league
postponed. They just completely caved. So it's like, do these contracts, do they mean anything? No. I mean,
I want to read you a couple of quotes here. LeBron James says this. He says, "Why does it always have to get to the point where we see the guns firing?" Now, that's the question that LeBron puts out there. And I would answer that back very civilly, very quietly. But I would say back to LeBron, the reason that you have to get to the point where you see the guns firing is because the people that are being fired upon, number one, are typically criminals. Number two, they're not listening to law enforcement that tells them to stand down. It tells them to stay still, not to go reach for a weapon or act like they're reaching for a weapon. Even any sign that a police officer has a split second of a split moment in time to make a, like, as they explained, to make a quick reaction. And that would be the answer back to LeBron James. Why does it always have to get to the point? Well, because you don't listen, and you've got a lot of criminals that have a past history that are doing these things. And as it's been pointed out to me, more than just one cop has lost their life from some criminal because they think nothing about turning around and killing.
Many more than one. Yeah. It's a long list of unfortunately largely forgotten men and women who were also victims of a difficult street situation that they did not ask for or invite, and certainly did not, you know, want to be a part of. I think it's incredibly, you know, and honestly, why are we listening to this man? Is he an expert on law enforcement procedure? Is he an expert on public policy? Has he been engaged in on city governments or on city councils overseeing this thing? He sort of kind of knows how to shoot a ball sometimes into a hoop. I mean, that's, and we give disproportionate voice to this, and he's simultaneously the exact same guy who basically had communist China's back, you know, potentially because of his affiliation with many companies that have manufacturing contracts there.
He's a disturbing black athlete. He's a black athlete, and they listen. And it's the same thing with Hollywood. Why do they listen to any of these people? Why do they listen to Robert De Niro's mouth go off? Being this, you know, he talks like a sewer politics, like he just came off of some, you know, street in some ghetto somewhere. He's got a mouth that doesn't stop.
Well, like any organization, there's varying political thoughts. I mean, there are many, many conservatives in professional sports. And I just gave you two examples in the Cowboys and in the 9/11 cleat situation, who have attempted to make symbolic statements in support of laudable causes, and they've been completely shut down. That's what's troubling. I honestly don't believe they're really, you know, I think it would be perfectly fine with most Americans if they just simply disengaged and played the game.
Well, that's what they want.
And if you want to go do something for a particular community, I mean, I went to college in Miami. I met, I had friends who grew up in Liberty City or in Overtown, and I talked to them. I mean, they felt they were overpoliced in those areas, and they always had a kind of more of a fear of police than I think I did growing up in suburban Pennsylvania.
I believe what's offensive to many, many millions and millions of Americans, and certainly what's offensive to conservatives and Republicans and what have you, and many others for that matter, is that these professional athletes, sports players, these movie people, the Hollywood, the singers, they attempt to force their opinions on you. And they do it when they're supposed to be entertaining you or playing professional athletes. And the problem is you spend good money for those tickets only to have them sit there and preach to you as to what their philosophy is or what their ideology is. And like everything, a lot of those groups, they line up on the far left. And for many in this country, that's not what they want. Take, for instance, the LA Clippers, their coach, Doc Rivers. Listen to what he says. And this is his words. He says, "We keep loving this country, and this country does not love us back." I mean, that's unbelievable that quote that he would say that we keep loving. You keep loving this country. You keep loving this country's money. That's what you're loving. Who the hell are you kidding? We keep loving this country's money. Keep paying hundreds and hundreds of dollars for your tickets, sucker. That's what they keep loving. What right does this coach have to say such a thing? We keep loving this country and this country. And this country does love them back. I mean, that really rips me up, that quote. Yes, this country loves you back. And they passionately go to your damn games and put food on their table to make you rich while you sit there and whine.
Well, yeah. And I mean, the only thing to try to represent what I think is really going on here. I mean, one is I think they're under enormous pressure from the far left. Our side is not really communicating in any of these influential institutions outside of the political ones. And then the second thing is, there are large constituencies of professional athletes who have come out of these hugely underdeveloped city environments where there's been nothing but problems. And, you know, do they see the greatness of America? I think they've come to see it as they elevated and become and been able to succeed in their profession. But they, you know, these are Democrat, liberal run cities. And unfortunately, the very people that are responsible for the problems that they're condemning are not on the receiving end of their criticism. That's what's astonishing to me. And the overstate, that the hypocrisy too. Mm-hmm. I mean, you remember the Kurt Schilling? You may know of him because he had a little bit of he's had a little bit of a broadcast career. Yeah. But you know, one of the great pitchers of all time, Phillies and
fantastic
and Red Sox and
Red
you know,
Sox go.
Yeah, you know, the bloody sock in 2004, that whole story. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he, whatever you think of the transgender bathroom debate a few years ago, and, you know, he put out shared a Facebook post, wasn't even his, that was critical of that position. And he was immediately terminated by ESPN. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the great all-time players and analysts, too, of our time. And, you can see that the culture is being created here is that we have plenty of open room for political views that we agree with and none for that we don't agree with. It's a problem, and it's another institution that's falling under their hands.
Another institution that's fallen under their hands. You know, I grew up in the Sandlot Balls. I played baseball. I wanted to be a professional baseball player, Michael, is what I wanted to do. And, you know, I had so many people so many idols. One of my favorites, Carl Yastrzemski, number 8. He won the Triple Crown in 1967. In fact, he was the last player to win the Triple Crown in Major League Baseball. What a feat. What a feat. And so many others I've seen come up through the Farm Club and into that. And, well, I'll tell you what. And now to see what's happened to Major League Baseball and what's happened to a lot of these sports we love. And I'll tell you, a lot of people, and certainly a lot of conservatives, a lot of Republicans are saying they're done with sports. In fact, right at the top of the program here, Tony Schaefer, he put something, he said, I will not do another, you know, another sports game. I will not go. And people are really turned off by this, Michael. They won't go again. They won't support it. You know,
well, there's a guy, you know, military experience, and I particularly find time with people, you know, who've served in the military and understand the meaning of that flag and how many people lost, Americans lost theirs.
All right, we'll take those records on next with Biden and Trump and talk about the disparity of what is being said out there in the media. Stay right there, friends. More Viewpoint Presents in just a moment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
All the war on America's cities and claims of racism in the ranks of law enforcement have spirited a renewed debate on racial equality. It was Alexis de Tocqueville who reminded us Americans are so enamored of equality, they would rather be equal in slavery than unequal in freedom. To which I say, be warned of the shiny object, America. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Well, it's a fight for the soul of humanity.
American Democracy in Action. Viewpoint presents Election 2020.
And boy, you know, the time does fly when you're having fun. This is probably the quickest 2 hours of talk radio. I start and it seems like we finish just seconds later here. All right, so listen, you hear a lot about this 50-year record, 47-year record, whatever you want to call it, with Joe Biden. And basically, he's a career politician. He's been here a very long time. The problem is, as with Biden and with all of these cats, is, and you hear me on my weekly show on the Voice of a Nation, they're there too damn long. And that's part of the problem. And the bigger problem is they don't get nothing done. And so here's a guy like Trump that comes in who's a threat to all of them. And he's just, you know, he's like, well, certainly my style, Michael. He's like, what I call Trump is kind of what I am, a canoe rocker. He's the kind of guy that gets on the canoe and starts rocking it left, right. That's what I am. I'm a bit of a canoe rocker. Sometimes I do it just for the enlighten the mood. Other times I believe because people are too complacent. And excellence and innovation and American ingenuity and exceptionalism only come from being uncomfortable sometimes. And as a nation, that is accurate as well. So let's talk about this. And with Joe Biden, when we look at his record, Michael, and we look at a lot of the things that Biden has done, and some, well, maybe better way to look at it is some of the missteps he's had over the years. He's had quite a few, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you were asked to sort of say what is this man accomplished, what is his single biggest accomplishment in 47 years, you'd get a struggle. I just don't think there's any, I mean, the obvious accomplishment is the fact that he was able to maintain this high level positional authority for so long. But, you know, when you drill down to actually what he said and done, it's so, it's utterly unremarkable. And he's been at the core of some of the more negative policies of our time. I cited some of the statistics of, where he left the country when he and Obama left. It was, certainly no miracle, and he is no miracle maker, as President Trump said in his acceptance speech, at the RNC. You know, also troubling, Malcolm, is his lies. I don't want to call them misstatements because they're lies. And he has a long track record of lying about fundamental facts. And you start with his education, saying that he graduated in the top of his class, you know, when he was like 60th of 70, I believe, or something like that. He was actually in the bottom of his class. Said he had 3 degrees that he obtained, you know, he had one. Said he was there on a full scholarship. Wasn't there at all on a scholarship. By the way, those aren't like the sort of things where you're at a profession for a while and you kind of, you know, forget maybe some of the details and misspeak. Those are outright lies. If you had 3 degrees, you would, or you know it. And if you had one and you said you had 3, you'd be lying about it. If he said you were at the top of the class and you were at the bottom of the class, you'd know it. And it goes on from there. He played for a long time, the horrific 1972 car accident, which, you know, it was horrible. His wife and daughter were killed in that. Said forever that it was a drunk driver that had hit him, you know, which was demonstrably untrue. Finally, the daughter of the driver had a right asking him to please stop saying that. He kept saying it. You know, presumably for political purposes, it was untrue. Said he had opposed. He's, in this campaign alone, he said he opposed the Iraq War. How, with a straight face, when you voted to authorize the use of force in this, can you get away with saying that you voted for the Iraq War? Again, if Trump were doing any of this stuff, it'd be there'd be outrage. I remember back in the Robert Bork nomination.
Yeah,
I had worked closely at that time with a pretty prominent attorney who was supportive and knew Bork personally. And Biden had come out and said, you know, he says, if Reagan nominates Bork, liberal groups will tear me apart. That's the medicine I'll have to take, saying he would vote to confirm Robert Bork. Mm-hmm. That was what he said, you know, kind of to the more centrist audiences. Then the vote came, and of course he just, you know, voted against it. He said more recently, this was on May 22nd, on his issue with the problem I think he's going to have with a lack of African American support. Take a look at my record, man. I have a record that is second to none. The NAACP has endorsed me every time I've run.
Oh, yeah.
You want to take a guess at how many times the NAACP has endorsed
Zero.
Joe Biden, Malcolm?
Zero.
That would be the number.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the number.
Yeah.
So this is a swamp creature.
Yeah.
This is a man. This is a man who certainly has no bashfulness about just outright lying about facts.
Well, let me ask you this. Well, yeah. What's his motivation? I mean, what I'm asking is, do you think he's just embellishing some of these things, or what's the motivation? I mean, because what bothers me about this is it goes to a man's character when you lie like this. Something's not right. What is it with him? Any idea?
It's a good question. I've thought a little bit about it. I think, you know, number one is I think he's been coddled by the media so much that he thinks he can get away with these misstatements. That's one thing. And the other thing is I think there's a level of insecurity there. I mean, you and I talked about it last week with the fact that every time he's confronted with anything that's unpleasant, he blows his gasket. This is not a kind man. He's being presented as the sort of kind uncle, but when he's confronted with the real world as it exists, and particularly his role in it, you know, he gets very hostile. And, you know, unfortunately, he's got a lot of very uncomfortable facts, I think, that he's going to have to confront in defending this unremarkable and, 47 mm-hmm. years in Washington.
And my guess is his campaign handlers know a lot of this. They're hiding it well, but I think they know they've got a handful trying to, you know, again, this is a guy who has run multiple times before for presidency and has never been successful anywhere. It's hard to imagine why they think they're going to be now, especially going after the forces of a Donald J. Trump. But, you know, we're starting to see a lot of telltale signs out there as well about this race. I think what makes this a little edgy and nervous for everybody is that, you know, it very well could be a landslide. Again, I don't want to predict anything, Michael, one way or another. I mean, anything could happen on this race, and we need to take it very seriously. But I think you're seeing the enthusiasm build for Donald Trump at this point, and I think they're very nervous on the left. And, Michael, I think they're going to do some other unprecedented things. There are more surprises to happen between now and November 3rd. You agree with that?
Oh, no doubt about it. You've heard the phrase October surprise, and those are iconic now politically. Both sides have done extensive opposition research on this other candidate, have big, thick books of things that exist, and then developments themselves. I do have to say that I look at both of these crises that we're confronting, the coronavirus pandemic launched on us by China, I believe, with political designs of undermining this president, because they know Joe Biden is soft on communist China. Yeah. He's proven that he's soft on communist China. They won him there desperately, as the president said in his acceptance speech. And the street riots are all a product of that far left of this country, mm-hmm. the donor money and their elected officials that somehow think that they are accomplishing something mm-hmm. politically by showing this level of mayhem in the country. I think both of those bets might backfire, because if the next 2 months are dedicated, at least in part, to explaining what I just said, the fact that these were political designs that hurt the American people and were designed to undermine the president, the reaction of the American people should be the exact opposite, pushing back on communist China, pushing back on the far left, and reelecting this president, giving him 4 years to continue fixing this country.
Yeah, incredibly well said, for sure. And you know, I've been talking about my daily program on the Voice of a Nation about the fact that, playing on what you just talked about, Michael, is that this could very well be the end of the Democrat Party. And I know it sounds like I'm being a little smart and smug maybe by saying it, but I'm just looking at the evidence, and I'm just looking at where we sit right now in the nation. And don't rule anything out, my friends. But I think we need to just be very cautious at this point, and we need to play to win. That's the final message, play to win. And it's important to play like you're behind. And we may very well be, who knows, definitely when it comes to our nation and making our nation all it can be. At this very moment of time, we are behind, and we need a lot of catching up here. So I encourage all of you to get involved in the game here. Let's get involved and let's make it happen. And the stakes could not be higher as we launch it. Let's just get from here to next January in one piece, please, as we have the new inauguration for the next 4 years. Let's just get to there, and then we can talk about some other big things to fix in this nation and to make it a better life for all. Again, thank you, my friends, for being with us here on Viewpoint, and just always being part of this mission. We really appreciate you out there, and continue on with the fight and the journey ahead here. It's time to get involved and get loved.